I'd like to bring this meeting to order, meeting of the House Military and Veterans Affairs Committee. Time is 1:03 on March 10th. Members present, Representative Sponholz, Representative Tuck, Representative Roucher, Representative Thompson, and myself, Co-Chair Shaw. And we have quorum. If you would, please silence your cell phones. If anyone in the audience today needs any issues, any concerns, Seth Witten is our committee aide over here. He'll take care of it. I'd like to thank our committee secretary, Shannon McCain, and Madison Truitt for teleconferencing. Our first and only order of business is House Joint Resolution 27, requesting the United States Department of Defense to invest in the Port of Alaska, sponsored by Representative Fields, who is with us today. This is the first hearing on the bill, and here to present this is the sponsor, Representative Fields, and his staff, Bessie Odom. Welcome. If you'd please join us at the table and introduce yourself and proceed with your presentation.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Zach Fields, House District 20.
For the record, Bessie Odom, staff to Representative Zach Fields.
And Mr. Chairman, Zach Fields, again, with your indulgence, if it's okay, I might let the mayor go first and offer his testimony since he's on a tight timeline and then do the presentation right after that, if that's okay.
We can do that. Mayor Brokowitz, are you on the line?
I'm Chair Shaw.
Thank you. Yeah, Mayor Brokowitz, could you just please identify yourself, your affiliation, and proceed with your testimony?
Hi, this is Ethan Brokowitz. I'm the mayor of Anchorage. And I want to thank the committee and the members and Representative Field and his team for having moved HJR 27 forward. I think we all know how critical the Port of Alaska is in terms of the infrastructure, not just for the state, but there's a component of it that is critical for national defense and making sure that our military is as prepared as it can be for whatever contingencies might emerge. And this resolution goes a long way towards urging Congress and the federal administration to participate in the reconfiguration of the new port so that we can honor that commitment. Unfortunately, the state of Alaska doesn't have the fiscal wherewithal, nor does the municipality of Anchorage, to do everything we can to support national defense. But with what amounts to a little bit of couch change from the federal government, we'll be able to support the federal mission, and I think that is a critical thing for us to do in order to make sure that we can continue to be one of the 17 seaports designated as strategic by the Department of Defense, and that we can continue to support the mission of all the bases that exist in the state of Alaska. So I would urge the committee's support. I'm somewhat heartened by the fact that more than half the committee has signed on as co-sponsors. I'm not much of a reader of legislative signs these days, but that strikes me as being a very good sign.
Thank you, Mayor Brokowitz. Does anybody have any questions for the mayor at the moment? And as a side note, I'd like to make note that Representative Jackson is now on board. Thank you. I see no questions for the mayor. Representative Fields, if you'd like to start with your presentation.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman, and thanks to you for helping me write this resolution and introduce it together. And I also want to thank all the other committee members who are signed on as co-sponsors. I think as most of the committee members are aware, the Port of Alaska is Alaska's largest port, handling more than three-quarters of all rail belt bound waterborne non-fuel freight cargo and 95% of all refined petroleum products. The port serves 85% of the state's population and well over 200 communities. So the Port of Alaska is aptly named the Port of Alaska. I think most relevant to this bill, the port is the primary entry point for our DOD installations, both in Fairbanks and in Anchorage. And materiel and fuel that is used on those bases comes through the Port of Alaska. The port is one of only 23 DOD-designated strategic seaports, and I don't know how many of the others are at risk, but I doubt any are at risk as a result of corrosion and potential failure in the event of a significant seismic event. So that's why I worked on this resolution with the chairman. Just a little more background on the port, mentioned it handles most consumer goods entering the state, and it is a foreign trade zone. On military use, I think most consumers in Alaska are aware that pretty much everything they use comes in through the Port of Alaska. I think the public is less broadly aware of how the port supports our military installations. So all the jet fuel at J-Bear comes through the Port of Alaska. The port supports DOD installations up north, including Wainwright, Eielson, Greeley. And the port has actually served an increasing need for jet fuel with the fighters up at Eielson. And it's really important that we continue to support those jets. So both the 172nd Stryker Brigade Combat Team at Wainwright and an Airborne Brigade Combat Team at Fort Rich both require the ability to deploy by sea, and of course the Port of Alaska supports that capability as well. Again, I mentioned this is one of almost two dozen strategic seaports across the country, and about 20% of cargo, much of which, but not all of which, being jet fuel, is defense-related. Again, 20% of everything that comes into the port is defense-related, and that also includes all the materiel for the defense installations. So, I've taken a tour of the port and taken a boat down to the pilings. The corrosion is really severe. I think anyone who's seen that firsthand can understand how urgent it is to upgrade the pilings and make sure that the port can continue to operate. And that's really the question, is can the port continue to operate in the event of a seismic event? The recent earthquake definitely put it at risk. We're very lucky that the damage wasn't greater, but we need to make these basic investments now. And the reality is that, port users simply cannot pay for all the necessary improvements themselves. The port has imposed higher tariffs. The port has worked with user groups. So all of us as consumers are going to be paying for these improvements, but that is not sufficient funding to make the necessary improvements for a port, one of whose primary uses is supporting our defense installations. So that actually covers my presentation, and I'm happy to answer any questions. And I did want to acknowledge, I didn't have the brilliant idea to write this joint resolution. Port commissioners visited, and specifically Bob Pulowski from Anchorage came by my office and shared the resolution from the Port Commission and asked that the legislature do one. And I thought, well, that seems like a no-brainer and something that we can follow up on. So thanks again to the Port Commission. Thanks to the co-chairman of this committee for helping write this, and I appreciate the committee's consideration.
Representative Rauscher.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Fields. So is there, I haven't read your bill, let's be honest with you. Is there a way to divvy out, or you said it's only 20% of what comes across in cargo. So how do you intend to utilize the money when, is it 20% of what was needed for the entire repair of the port? Is it 20% of another number? So I guess I'm wanting to know how the number was arrived, and also what the number is and how you intend to separate the work, if you at all intend to separate the work.
Sure. Through the chair, the resolution, the 20% is really just a figure to show how important this port is for DOD. The resolution is written more generally, and there are a bunch of whereases about how the Port of Alaska is essential to our defense installations, but the be it resolved phrase, which I can just read now, is actually fairly general and just says, be it resolved that the Alaska State Legislature requests that the U.S. Department of Defense augment existing public and private funding in the Port of Alaska to ensure that the Port of Alaska remains operational and can withstand potential future earthquakes and to guarantee continued supportive operations at J-Bear, Wainwright, Eielson, and Fort Greeley. So the resolution is just general. Whatever amount of money DOD and Congress would be able to invest would be helpful. I know that the congressional delegation did recently announce some MARAD funding, but there's clearly an opportunity for more, and if we ever got 20% of necessary funding from DOD, that would be a huge victory for our entire community, but the resolution is not that specific.
Follow up?
Yes, sir.
So 20%, I get it, would be a huge victory, but where does it get spent?
I think the port staff is online and available to answer questions. I believe the first project going forward is the cement terminal, and clearly some pilings need to be replaced. My understanding is the port facility serves both inbound consumer and military purposes in the same facility. So in terms of DOD funding, it's not like we're asking to build a separate facility for DOD. And then the two main shipping companies have different methods for moving containers onto the port. But in terms of specifics in the port's kind of, you know, short-term and medium-term plan, I'm gonna defer to the port staff to give a more detailed answer.
And one more follow-up question. I was just wondering, since we may refer to some other staff on the phone, does the military pay any fees for using the port right now?
And I'm also going to defer that in terms of the payment structure with tariffs and what share the military ends up bearing for that material coming in.
I guess I missed the answer. I'm sorry, what?
I'm going to defer to the port staff in terms of describing the tariff structure and how much of that is paid by military.
Okay. Representative Sponholz.
Do we want to hear from the...
If you don't mind, yeah, we can bring them on board.
I'd love to hear what they have to say before I ask my questions.
Okay. Then we will take testimony from Captain Bob Pawlowski, who's the Vice Chair of the Port Commission. Captain Pawlowski, if you'd like to come on board, let us know who you are and your affiliation, please, and then give us your testimony. Captain Pawlowski, are you on the line? Guess we don't have. So get at ease. Back on the record, if we could take the, let's see here. Next in line would be Steve Rabufo, hope I have that right, Director of the Port of Alaska. Mr. Rabufo, if you'd like to please identify yourself and your affiliation for the record and then proceed with your testimony, please.
Sure, let me make sure you can hear me first.
We can hear you.
Excellent. Well, good afternoon, and thank you for the opportunity to speak in support of House Joint Resolution 27. I'm Steve Rabufo, Director of the Port of Alaska. I've been at the port since August 2007 when I came aboard as the Deputy Director. I have now been the Director for 5.5 years. Prior to that, I had a 30-year career in the Air Force and retired as a Colonel. During my time on active duty, I did a 3-year tour as Director of Logistics for Headquarters Alaskan Command. So I can honestly say that I've experienced the port-DOD relationship from both sides of the fence. I compliment the authors for doing an excellent job of capturing our port's importance to both the state and to the DOD, be it fuel for military ops or for base gas stations, supplies and equipment for the military mission, or groceries and retail items for base commissaries and exchanges. This port is a key node to every one of those supply chains. You've also acknowledged that there is no existing process for DOD to participate in financing major port infrastructure efforts to ensure that the capabilities they expect from a strategic port will be available when they need. And I can say from experience that this is a concern shared by all commercial strategic seaports. Here in Alaska, in spite of the incredible working relationship between our port users and DOD logistics partners, everyone agrees that there is no guarantee that everything DOD needs will be available and deliverable 24/7, 365. There is as much a likelihood that commercial operations will have to halt in order for DOD to conduct their activities as there is that DOD will have to work around commercial operations when it's necessary to do so. But if DOD had a way to be a continuing financial partner in strategic port infrastructure planning and construction, the probability of having to deal with that kind of an interruption goes almost to zero. I think your resolution delivers that message for us very nicely. Thank you again for your support in this effort, and I'm happy to answer any questions you might have at this time.
Yes, so Representative Svonholz would like to have a question, please.
Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Rebuffalo, for your testimony today. So, you know, the port was made at a military strategic port in 2004, and I'd love to hear from you a little bit about what kind of funding is available from the Department of Defense for the port that we should be exploring that this resolution would help enable.
Well, I think I can answer your question and Representative Rauscher's at the same time with this. When the DOD uses the port for deployments or redeployments, the extent of what they pay us is they pay their bills. There is nothing within the strategic port construct for DOD that requires DOD to provide anything else for port infrastructure maintenance or replacement. It is exclusively pay your bills when you use the facility.
Follow up, yes.
So are you saying that there is no additional funding that would be available? It's my understanding that we just got some federal grant money, or they're not funding through programs like the Strategic Seaport Program or the National Port Readiness Network Fund that could be available for the port?
That's correct.
Okay.
Good. Any additional questions from members? Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So does the Department of Defense pay the same rates as any other private entity when using the port?
Yeah, the Department of Defense pays the tariff rates because how they will operate is they will either bring in their big gray-bottom military sealift command vessels or they will contract with a commercial carrier to move their equipment and supplies. So they pay the rates that are published in the tariff when they use the port.
And those published rates are the same that anyone that's using the port would be subject to?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Well, let me caveat that. With the exception of if they should happen to use one of the two ocean carriers that call here and are tenants down here, specifically Matson and Tote. Matson and Tote have what we call preferential user agreements where they have negotiated in return for a guaranteed annual cargo amount and a guaranteed number of port calls, a relief from the published tariff rates. If the DOD has contracts for one or both of these carriers to move their goods and services, then the charges will be in accordance with those rates and not the tariff.
Thank you, and thank you for that answer, and thanks for expanding on that. So if with our economic downturn that we're seeing right now, if Tote and Matson isn't using our port facilities as much as they used to, we still get a guaranteed some sort of payment from them based on that preferential treatment.
Yeah, the volumes are what they guarantee we're going to see on an annual basis. And you know, I've got to be honest, so far we're not seeing much of a downturn here. People like to eat, and they like to go buy new clothes and put gasoline in their car tanks. And unless large portions of the population are up and leaving, we're going to see a fairly flat business model in 2020, not much different than 2019.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Jackson.
Thank you, through the chair. So how often does DOD, because you're saying they pay the tariff as they use the port, how often do they use a port annually?
Well, let me answer that question two different ways. Okay. There is military equipment moving through the port all the time. Let's put the deployment mission for U.S. Army Alaska aside for a second and just talk about the normal commercial operations. You know, they send equipment to depots for maintenance and refurbishing and the like, and that stuff passes through here all the time, and it goes in and out on our two scheduled carriers that call here twice a week. Mm-hmm. So that answer to the question is just about every month. When you ask the deployment question, which is the large major muscle movements of equipment and helicopters
and the like. Those will vary depending upon what the what the national response responsibilities are for either the 125 Striker Brigade up at Fort Wainwright or the 425 Airborne Brigade here at Fort Rich. Last year there were 7 military movements that required staging of large amounts of equipment for deployment and then the redeployment of it. In 2018, there were only 2 of those. So it varies based on the, based on what the ops tempo is for U.S. Army Alaska.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
Thank you. Through the chair. However, every time they use the facility, they are paying their bills, as you say, the rate that you have set for them to utilize.
Yes, ma'am. Everybody pays.
Okay. Follow up. Thank you. So I'm looking at the Senator Sullivan applauds the $20 million infrastructure development grant for Port of Alaska. Is that not enough? Like, do we have a portion that we're paying, that we're asking DOD to match?
Okay, I think we've got an apple and an orange here.
Okay.
Let me put the $20 million in context. The $20 million that was recently received is in addition, by the way, to $25 million that we were notified by USDOT that we received late in the fall to go towards offsetting the construction costs of the first piece of new infrastructure that we will begin construction on this summer that we call a petroleum and cement terminal. When you ask, and this is grant money, this isn't, earmarked kind of things or set aside kind of things. This was a specific grant request that we applied for just like every other transportation facility in the country did and were fortunate enough to be granted. So specifically, we asked for that money in response to the construction of the petroleum cement terminal in order to offset what it is we would have to go to a bank to borrow to finish that construction. And we were successful with now offsetting what it was we were going to have to borrow by about $45 million. The remainder, we will go out to the banking community this spring to enter into a financing arrangement with so that we can finish that project. And that's going to be somewhere in the $100 million range. Because the petroleum cement terminal is the means by which the military fuel that is used at Joint Base Elmendorf Richardson comes into the port, then the military will be paying a portion of that debt service coverage through their use of the port to bring in that fuel. But I can't specifically tell you how many dollars that's going to be. It varies based on how much fuel they're bringing in on an annual basis.
Follow up.
Well, it's slightly different, but thank you for that clarification. So my next question is, have we sat down with DOD and the engineers to have a conversation? Or is it taking this extent to have a conversation, the House joint resolution?
No, I think I understand your question. Not necessarily with engineers. With logisticians, absolutely. All the way up to the general officer level. Every time we get a visit down here from one of the commanding generals from either U.S. Army or from the U.S. Transportation Command or the Surface Deployment Distribution Command that does all the movements, everybody likes to bring generals down to the port because they like to show them the operation that goes on down here and help us advocate on our behalf as best they can for the condition of the facility and support in getting funding, whether it's from whether it's from USDOT or through the grant community or whatever. In fact, we get some of the best letters of support for our grant applications from the DOD.
because that's all they can do for us right now. They have no mechanism to give us money, but they can give us a whole lot of vocal support in writing for how important this port is to their mission. I think the goal for this resolution is to change that a little bit and hopefully provide an avenue where some amount of funding for DOD infrastructure needs at strategic seaports can happen. And that would just be a wonderful thing.
Thank you. Representative Spanholz?
So, Mr. Buffalo, I'm a little bit confused because when, you know, the purpose of the resolution is to request that the U.S. DOD invest in the Port of Alaska. That's the title, the short title of the resolution. And you just described sort of the tariff payment, which, you know, the bulk of that goes for fuel, which is sort of an ongoing tariff charges associated with that. But when I asked you about other funding that might be available, you said there was none. And so I'm sort of trying to connect the dots here. If the purpose of the resolution is to help us to secure more funding from the state, from the federal DOD, but there isn't any funding available, can you help sort of clarify for the committee what it is that the resolution achieves?
Sure. I would like to just correct one thing you mentioned when you said most of the money was for fuel. About half. Fuel is half of what it is that goes to DOD installations from the port. The other half is supplies and equipment to include consumer goods for commissaries and exchanges and the like. So it's not really the majority of it being fuel, although fuel is probably the most noticeable part of it right now. My understanding of the resolution and Representative Fields can correct me if I'm wrong, is it's desirable by all of us in the strategic port industry that some kind of a mechanism be put in place for DOD to be able to provide infrastructure financing for construction and facilities that would serve, you know, that would serve their purpose with a higher probability of them being available when they're actually needed, as opposed to us having to call audibles to make room for them when they come down here. The other aspect of it with respect to this particular port is there's a requirement that gets published every year called a port readiness plan that gives us specifics that DOD is looking for when they come down here. With respect to the number that they put in that for the length of berths that they would require to bring their vessels in here to serve a deployment purpose, that length is greater than that which we would need to build to solve our own commercial needs. So absent any financing to pay for that additional length, they're going to have to live with that which makes the most sense for us to build for business purposes. And the point of something, you know, the point of an effort like this could give them an opportunity to either accept the fact that it's a smaller berth capability and live with it, or provide the funding needed so that they can have exactly what it is they want. Right now there's no flexibility, but this, I think, certainly would provide that.
Follow up.
Thanks for the clarification on the percentage of, the percentage of cargo that is fuel. I think that I extrapolated incorrectly from the presentation that the bulk of it was fuel. But
it's complicated. So
there's a decision point coming up for the port with regard to. Or a series of decision points with regard to, you know, the size of the port, that we're gonna have to make some decisions at the state level or at the municipal level, I guess, with regard to whether we invest at a higher level that would allow the port to serve that military strategic port, or with a smaller footprint to meet primarily the more sort of traditional commercial purposes of the port. What's the time frame for the port to be making decisions? To be making decisions. I understand there's some big price tags that come across with the additional capacity to be a military strategic port.
Yeah, well, here's how I think, I hope this answers the question, is we are in discussions now with the cargo, you know, we're talking about the cargo dock portion of the modernization program down here, which is the next phase. And we are in conversations with those users who are going to benefit from that portion so that we can get their inputs into what the requirements are going to be so that when we sit down and begin in earnest the design process, we've got all the data that we need to build something that's right-sized as opposed to oversized. And DOD will be invited to sit in on those conversations. But at the end of the day, you know, we're going to have to look at where the money's coming from and where the line is drawn on what we could make a business case for and what would be a nice to have. I think somewhere in the next year and a half, we will come to that conclusion and be able to put out in the light of day what the design will be going forward. But we're certainly not going to do it without involving DOD so that they have a complete understanding of what it is that's going to happen here as we move along. Do I think our strategic port designation is in jeopardy? No, I don't. And I only say that because, you know, as I said, we've had lots of general officers come through here who are very understanding of the circumstances that we have. And having spent a little time on the other side of the fence, I can tell you, you know, flexibility is always going to be the key, and I think a compromise position can be made, and to assure that we will always be a strategic seaport.
Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you already shared this information, if you don't mind repeating, how much of the goods and services going goods and fuel that going in and out of the Port of Anchorage, Port of Alaska, is attributed to the Department of Defense?
Well, yeah, I'll admit it's kind of a back of an envelope thing. If we look at the volumes and how much of it can be military focused and how much of it we hear from the users here who make the deliveries to the bases, it does come out to be around 20%. I wouldn't bet that, but it's pretty darn close to that, and it's a pretty good split between dry goods, bulk goods, and refined petroleum.
And if I may, Mr. Chair. What about other fuels? Are there other, outside Department of Defense, are there fuels coming in the Port of Anchorage to serve Alaska? I'm sorry, Port of Alaska to serve Alaska.
Yeah, no, commercial grade jet fuel, high sulfur diesel fuel for heating oil, low sulfur diesel fuel, and unleaded gasoline, as well as aviation gasoline, which is basically leaded fuel. We cover the watershed of all the liquid bulk products because we have customers in state who require all of them.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, and is the Port of Alaska also have lawsuits against the federal government over the oversight and construction of the port currently?
Not lawsuits. There is one. With the Maritime Administration, who was the lead federal agency and project manager for the old intermodal expansion project, where there have been a significant amount of construction-related, bad work done and a big area that is unusable as a consequence. So there's an attempt to recover damages for that which we've been left to have to deal with, but is otherwise unusable.
If I may, Mr. Chair. And that Maritime Administration is under what department?
Department of Transportation.
Okay, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for your answers.
You're welcome.
Any other questions from the committee?
If I may make a comment, Mr. Chair. When I look at the be it resolved and the copies of who it goes to, I almost think that we should also have a copy go to U.S. Department of Transportation because of the mess that we're in right now and trying to serve the federal government's needs, especially when it comes to Department of Defense. So I think that's something that we should consider. I also think that we should consider sending one to the Department of Interior as well, because look how much lands that the federal government owns of the state of Alaska. And with 60% of the lands, when you look at Department of Interior really controlling 75% of federal lands, and then looking at all the natural resources that they control, I think that it's appropriate, especially when the Department of Interior also looks over American Natives, Alaska Natives, and Natives of Hawaiian. So for those reasons, I would like to look at that as a consideration also. We want to look at all opportunities to be able to get federal help to make sure that Port of Alaska isn't just serving Alaska's needs, mm-hmm. but Port of Alaska is also serving America's needs.
Appreciate productive, constructive committee comments, always. Any other comments from the... Okay, we have the mayor from the North Star Borough in Fairbanks, Brittany Smart, next in line. Ms. Smart, are you on board?
Yes, sir. My name is Brittany Smart, and I'm special assistant to Mayor Ward here at the Fairbanks North Star Borough. I will be working on submitting some written comments to you all from Mayor Ward. However, based on the conversation we just heard, I'm going to deviate from what I had planned to say. Just note that in summary, Fairbanks supports it. It's important. It's strategic. In terms of the availability of funds, the Fairbanks North Star Borough is a member of the Association of Defense Communities, and what that organization does is really help connect military installations and communities to help hear the military's needs and leverage the role that communities play to help meet those needs and benefit both entities. And one way that they've really been doing that is working with Congress to establish the DCIP program, and that's the Defense Critical Infrastructure Program. And both Senator Murkowski and Senator Sullivan were supportive of this, and DOD has been allocated $50 million for this year. Now, of course, the need far exceeds that $50 million, but DOD does have funding right now to spend outside of the fence line. That is specifically what it's for. How can we support defense communities' critical infrastructure that support the mission critical and installation critical items in the community? And how can we fund that with DOD funding? Now, that funding is sitting in DOD, but they have yet to establish the criteria for award and review. The Fairbanks North Star Borough did participate in the call for projects in order to demonstrate the need. We put forward IGU, and I would encourage this body to look at that program as an opportunity, work in support with the Association of Defense Communities as they call on Congress to ask for that to be an annual appropriation, and work with us as we ask DOD to fund these critical infrastructure programs. In general, we're in support. The Port of Alaska is critical to not only our economy, but the military industry here in our community. Thank you. I'm available for any questions that you may have.
Any questions from the committee for Ms. Smart? Seeing or hearing none, I'd like to go back to Bob Pawlowski, Captain, with the Port Commission. He's the Vice Chair of the Port Commission. Mr. Pawlowski, if you'd like to introduce yourself and give us your testimony, please.
Representative Shaw, thank you for rolling back up the calendar. We had some technical difficulties here at the LIL. I'm Captain Bob Pawlowski, now retired Vice Chair of the Port Commission, and I'm here to support HCR 27 and answer questions. I think the important thing right off the bat is the role of the Port Commission is to develop and propose tariffs for goods and services across the port to the Anchorage for approval. Recently, the Anchorage approved the tariffs for the PCT construction and to deal with cost recovery for the indebtedness. In the future, we're going to have to do the same thing for the cargo tariffs associated with consumer goods coming into the port, primarily on Matson and Tote. And it's key in that we consider how the quality of living that attracts our military here and keeps our military here is dependent on the port. Basically, there's about $2.9 billion in federal defense spending in 2017 to support the port, support Alaska, and that fund continues to be a significant level. Our port up here is really a strategic, important port, but it's unfunded and has a federal mandate, and yet without it being funded or having some contribution, we really can't design the port to the level of resiliency to ensure proper response in a national security incident or in a disaster. And the options without the port functioning is going to be an extremely difficult and arduous airlift until in the short term and major sea lift to be able to continue military operations at the strategic level we presently have. So this whole issue of designing the port for the resiliency is really a key that comes into, are we designing it for its commercial viability or are we designing it for strategic resiliency? I think this resolution helps to at least carry forward the importance of having this strategic resilience in place. The other point, very important, is that unlike the 15 of the 17 strategic ports, only Guam and us are on a separate road system, which again comes back to overland road lift for strategic support is going to be very difficult, given our established infrastructure with the port to deal with all our stuff. The other point is that I think is important is that while we passed this resolution as kind of a template for supporting our delegation, I'm glad to see being picked up as a discussion item. We did it during the MARAD authorization period in support of Senator Sullivan's request. Here, we're kind of ahead of the curve on exactly what the mechanism would be, and I appreciate the questions the committee has had on how do you get the funding, as Steve Rebuffo said, how do you get the authorization into the strategic seaport language so that we can get defense military contract spending into it. The final two points I want to make is the port, particularly through Matson, not only supports our military bases on the mainland of Alaska, but it also supports the Integrated Support Command at Kodiak, the largest Coast Guard station in the nation. And the final one, in addition to our military importance, the quality of life that the port has brought has enabled us to have the highest per capita veterans in the state. And our veterans not only depend on the quality of life, but they depend on the services the VA brings into us. And so with that, I will conclude and answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Pawlowski. Representative Spotholz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mr. Pawlowski, Captain Pawlowski, thanks for your testimony today. Could you dig into the relationship between the Port of Alaska and Kodiak that you described earlier in a little more detail? I think there's a few of us that are curious about how the Port of Alaska supports the military installations in Kodiak.
Yeah, that's a very simple question, and thank you for the question, as well as the opportunity to meet with you and particularly all of the members of this committee back in February. The important thing is Kodiak is dependent on Matson after Matson calls on the Port of Alaska. A direct container trip into Kodiak would only be by barge. It's just not a large enough port to support a full container ship. However, by stopping in Anchorage and then continuing on to Kodiak, the DOD or the Coast Guard and the community can receive the containerized cargo, as well as the vehicles and other services associated with that. Does that answer your question?
It does. Thank you very much.
Do we have any other questions for anybody that was online? Any questions for the sponsor? Yes. Representative Tuck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought I heard in your testimony, Representative Fields, and through the chair, that the Port of Anchorage is now one of 23 strategic defense ports. I see an article where it says 16. I see in the resolution it says 17. Is 23 the latest number?
The distinction there, through the chair, is that I believe it's the 17 are commercial seaports, and then there's additional five that are DOD ports, which would bring us up to 22. So it just depends on how you categorize them, if you're only looking at commercial versus adding on those DOD ports.
As I may, thank you, Mr. Chair. So the Department of Defense has two classifications in determining the strategic importance of a seaport, and that is one defense and the other one's commercial?
Through the chair, my understanding is that the majority of the strategic seaports serve both commercial and DOD functions, while a minority of them only serve DOD functions. And I don't know that the Department of Defense weights one of those more heavily than the other in terms of importance to the defense installations.
So if I may, Mr. Chair, I'm still a bit confused, but you're okay with the number 17 being in the resolution?
That's fine, because that's consistent with the commercial strategic seaports, of which the Port of Alaska is one.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Thompson.
I just wanted to make a statement about this. You're running questions. I can do the statement later.
No, I don't see any other questions. That'd be fine.
I just want to thank Representative Fields for bringing this forward. I feel like I've been on all sides of this myself. I was in the Army back in 1965 at Fort Wainwright, and I worked in the transportation office when we shipped the 6th and 9th Infantry, which was basically the entire Fort Wainwright population of military, over to Vietnam. And I was in the transportation office and manifested every one of the rail cars that was leaving, hundreds of them shipping down to Anchorage for everything to be put on the ships to be sent to Vietnam. Then in 2001 to 2007, I was city mayor, and we shipped the Stryker Brigade from Fort Wainwright overseas also. So I was involved with watching all that happen again. And the importance of that particular port, without that port there, we wouldn't have a mission that would be able to be deployed to other places in the world, and it's so important. Also, just to straighten out some of the statements you had in your sponsor statement, Eielson Air Force Base, all of the jet fuel is made there in Fairbanks at the refinery there. They have a pipeline going right to Eielson. And also that refinery ships a lot of jet fuel to Elmendorf by rail. So, but the other portions of the military up there depend on incoming aviation fuel and things like that. So we have quite a connection there with that port, and I think it's so important, and I like this, and I really appreciate this bill.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Jackson.
Thank you. Through the chair. So I'm curious, if DOD have five different ports, where are they?
Through the chair, I don't know where those other non-commercial strategic seaports are located.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Sponholz.
Yep. Thank you. I wanted to also thank the resolution sponsor for bringing this forward. I think that we've identified sort of the challenge that ensuring that the port has the capacity to meet military needs requires funding, and that Alaskans want to do that. We think that that's important. We understand the strategic importance of our military bases in the state of Alaska, and we want to meet that need. We will also need funding to be able to achieve that, because we've seen that some estimates of the port are really considerable. Numbers have been as high as $2 billion. I know that some really amazing work is being done to identify the difference between wants and needs at the port, and so the final price tag will be much smaller, but we would essentially be, you know, passing on the entire cost of military infrastructure onto ratepayers, you know, and consumers in the state of Alaska if we don't find a way to secure additional funding. I know our federal delegation is interested in doing that, thus the recent $20 million grant we received, but we really need to, you know, unturn every stone in order to secure adequate funding for this very important asset for our community. And I also want to thank Representative Thompson for sort of underscoring the fact that the Port of Alaska is not just an Anchorage asset, but it is an asset that serves the entire state. About 80% of the goods that cross the port are, you know, distributed across the state, not just in Anchorage. And so, you know, this is a important piece of infrastructure, not just for South Central Alaska, but for the interior. We heard about Kodiak. That was a new one on me, understanding the importance of the Port of Alaska and ensuring that Kodiak and the Coast Guard get what they need to be operational to. I think we've just underscored that this is an important asset, and I look forward to, you know, moving this on to the House floor soon.
Any additional comments? I would also like to say thank you to this committee for the very productive conversation that we have on this. I think it's a very valuable resolution that it could very well be productive and for the benefit of the state of Alaska. So thank you all very much. I don't see any other comments. We will be bringing this resolution back up on Thursday for public testimony. And thank you to the bill sponsor and all the testifiers for today's presentation. Seeing no further business before the committee, this meeting is adjourned at 1:55.